This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
And welcome into hour number two of Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. Another gorgeous spring day, and fitting that it comes on this Mother's Day. So happy birthday to all the moms out there. If you're out and about heading to a breakfast or a brunch or a family get-together today, hopefully it's an enjoyable day for you. All the moms deserve all the thanks in the world, and it's going to be a good day. And I'll have a little bit more of a message about that later in the show based on something that Stephen St. John said earlier this week on the Border Patrol, which was a really good message, and I'm just going to pass that along because I thought Stephen said it very well, and I'm going to kind of add some thoughts to that. So coming up a little bit later in the show, Josh Briscoe is going to jump in studio and join us as he gets ready for baseball tonight, which comes up at 11 o'clock. Royals in Cleveland to finish out their series, 12-10 first pitch. So Josh will have the pregame coverage on baseball tonight. Then this afternoon at 2 o'clock, the NBA pregame show comes on. And then at 2:30, Cavaliers and Celtics. And I love the fact that 810 WHB has the NBA games on because, especially on weekends, if I have to drive around, I'm like, I really want to watch that playoff game. And I have to go to the grocery store, do something else, or run to a kid's soccer game. But I can tune on 810 and listen to the NBA game. So if you can't get near a TV today, 2:30 for Cavaliers and Celtics. Right now, I want to talk Kansas Speedway and NASCAR with our good friend Kirk Elliott, part of the Racing Boys, regular feature here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And Kirk, I have known you going back to the Don Fortune days at KMBZ probably 24, 25 years ago. So I've been listening to you for a long time, and I appreciate you joining us to talk about this weekend's races.
Hey, it's good to be with you this morning. How you doing?
I am doing great. You don't have to get to Iowa State football yet. You still got a couple of months, so you can keep your focus totally on NASCAR for right now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, so, Kirk, we've seen a driver or two dominate Kansas Speedway for either a year or a short period of time. I know Jeff Gordon had many good runs in the early days when Kansas Speedway first opened, but Kevin Harvick has now won three consecutive races at Kansas Speedway. You were out there all weekend. He made a pass on the final lap to get the win. Is it simply because he excels on mile and a half tracks, or does he say something there specific about Kansas Speedway that appeals to his driving style or the way his team sets up his cars?
I'm getting a little scratchiness in the phone there, so I hope you can hear me fine.
We can hear you.
Yeah, it's, Kevin Harvick is a driver that has really came to Kansas Speedway in the past and performed well. He's won two races in the past here at this Speedway, but this year he is so dominant, and it's been 21 years since 1997 that we've seen a driver win five of the first 12 races. And Kevin Harvick has done that this year. At one point, he won three in a row. He showed his strength early on the season at Atlanta, Las Vegas, and Phoenix, winning three in a row there. And now he's won two in a row after winning at Dover last week. He just dominated the entire weekend. I mean, he was out in practice early on and dominated the one practice session that they had on Friday. He sat on the pole in qualifying and then looked like he was going to run away with it early, but it wasn't easy for Harvick because there were two drivers, Kyle Larson and Ryan Blaney, that looked like they had something for him, but then with just a handful of laps left, both Blaney and Larson really took each other out of the race. Blaney got down on the inside of him, and he cut down a tire after getting up against Larson. Larson had issues in his right rear, too, so really once those two were taken out of the race, Harvick was really left to dominate the rest of the way, and it looked like Martin Truex Jr., who was going for his third straight win at Kansas Speedway, was going to have something for him, but he didn't have four fresh tires like Kevin Harvick did. He just stayed out there trying to get track position with two tires, and it just wasn't nearly enough, and Harvick was able to run him down and pass him there with just a little more than a lap left and win the race. So even though it wasn't as easy as he thought it might be, it still turned out to be a pretty dominant weekend for Kevin Harvick.
We're talking with Kirk Elliott from the Racing Boys. Check him out at racingboys.com, and also he makes He and Scott Traylor are regular guests here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'll just tell you, Kirk, if you have any trouble with your phone line, we can try to call again. But if you're good to go, it sounds like it's cleaned up a little bit. If it's
yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you fine now.
Okay, all right. It sounds like it's cleared up a little bit. So when Blaney and Larson got together, and I think Kyle Larson is a fun driver to watch. He's been a rising star for a while now. But Blaney admitted after the race it was his fault. But I hated to see that late in the race, because I go back to something Rusty Wallace would say years ago when Rusty was always a regular up front. He would say, you know, the early part of the race is for logging laps. We don't need to be banging and bumping early in the race. Wait till we get to the end. And then even when it gets to the end, a driver makes a mistake, and it costs both of you a chance. And I'm sure Kyle Larson is really licking his wounds today, thinking about what could have been a win at Kansas Speedway.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. In this case, you really can't blame Kyle at all. I think even Ryan took full blame on that.
Yes.
When he got down on the inside, but definitely he had a chance to win this race had that not occurred. I think he really had something for Harvick right there at the end. And Kyle Larson runs so well on the high side of the racetrack, and that was really the best line to run on the weekend after heavy rains came in on Saturday morning, washed all the rubber off the racetrack from Friday night's truck race. They still widen it out to the high side of the racetrack, and that's typically where Kyle Larson runs the very best. And, boy, if that hadn't occurred, I really think he had a shot of winning that race. I mean, he led quite a lot of that event.
It was 100 laps.
Too, but I really thought Kyle Larson really had his best chance to win before that happened.
All right, Kirk, we didn't see any wrecks until we got to the final 30 laps, and then we saw two big ones. And unfortunately, the second one knocked out two of our local guys, Clint Bowyer, who, God, I remember interviewing him when he was a kid out at the old I-70 Speedway, and he was super nice then, and he's still super nice today, and he got knocked out. He wants to win at this track bad. He told Kevin Keatsman this week it'd be great for Kansas Speedway to have a local kid win it. And then Jamie McMurray also knocked out of the race, and just, boy, Clint's had some bad luck over the years at Kansas Speedway with being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, and you know, it really started out on Friday when they weren't able to get his car through the tech line and get him out to qualify.
That was strange, yeah.
In a better spot, I think he would have been in a much better position to stay out of that kind of a situation, because he had to really fight the whole race to get himself back up in a position to where he could win. He had a fast race car, so really that was kind of a bad vibe from Friday that carried out through the whole weekend. And you know, it's just a tough situation. And it all started when William Byron was going out there, as did several of the other guys, trying to get track position with two tires. He just got loose and got into Clint, and he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's all you can say about it.
Yeah, and that was certainly a disappointing part about that. But the bottom line is Clint Bowyer is still top five in the points. I believe he's still four after last night.
Yep.
So that's the positive. He's still top four and has a good chance of making the playoff at the end. Did you get a chance to talk to Clint after the race?
I didn't talk to Clint after. We had an interview with him before this bad effort in qualifying. Not a bad effort. They just didn't get the car to the line. So we talked to him. He was really in a jovial, very good mood when we talked to him on Friday afternoon, feeling a lot better about getting back up and running up front for the first time in 4 or 5 years. I mean, he won his first race in 5.5 years earlier this year in Martinsville. And the big thing about Clint is he is really in the playoffs. He won that race at Martinsville, so he's going to be in the playoffs. He's going to be in the All-Star race next week at Charlotte. So when you win a race like he did a few weeks back at Martinsville, that puts you in the ball game, and it just felt like it took a big burden off of him by winning that race. And he's got a lot of pressure on him driving that 14 car that Tony Stewart was so successful in. You got a lot of pressure on you when you're tabbed to drive the number one, you know, car for what the boss used to drive, Tony Stewart. And when he won that race at Martinsville, it just lifted a big burden off of him. And now he's in the game. He's going to be in the playoffs at the end of the year. And that's just a huge thing for Clint after having three or four years of just not really good performances.
Yeah, he bounced around from a couple of teams and different crew chiefs, and I felt bad because when he left Richard Childress, that was a place I thought he'd be forever, but then finally got back with a good team and a good stretch and hopefully gets another win or two this season. We're talking with Kirk Elliott from the Racing Boys. You hear him regularly here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, kind of recapping last night's race at Kansas Speedway, won by Kevin Harvick. All right, Kirk, what was there chatter among the teams or among other members of the media about this news that came out this week that the France family is considering selling NASCAR? And, I mean, it's been talked about before, but now they have a financial firm that is in place that could negotiate for them. Was there talk amongst the crews, the drivers, or members of the media about this news coming out and what it bodes for the future of NASCAR?
I think everybody's just trying to make sense of this whole thing. I'm not sure if NASCAR themselves, the France family, put that out as a trial balloon, trying to figure out what the value is of the organization and the sport in particular, because it's gone through some pretty rough times over the last several years. The economy went south in 2008, and that's when things started to go downhill just a little bit in terms of fans in the stands and also ratings on television, and maybe they're just going out to try to figure out what the organization is worth. I find it shocking that the France family would ever want to sell NASCAR that was started by them. Big Bill France started the organization back in 1949. It's been there for almost 70 years. That family would ever want to get rid of it. I mean, it's still a pretty valuable property to have. They've made a lot of money off of it. Why they would ever consider selling the organization is beyond my comprehension, but maybe they are. Maybe they just want to try to get out. There's there's some younger people in the France family that you wonder how interested they are in carrying the legacy forward. I don't know, but it's still a pretty valuable commodity that any family, a private organization like that would ever want to sell it. But we'll see what happens.
Yep.
My guess is if it does sell, it'll go to some kind of a communication company. I know Comcast, Xfinity is interested maybe in taking a look at it. How much it's going to go for, it's still going to go for a pretty high price. There's no doubt about that, and not one or two individuals more than likely would have enough money to purchase NASCAR because it would be worth so much, but you never know. It's be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
Well, maybe the kids don't have the stomach to make the tough decisions to kind of, as you said, rebuild the interest in the sport, be it television ratings or figuring out a new way to sell tickets. And I was thinking about this when you guys were talking with Kevin Kietzman this week on Between the Lines. You were talking about different media companies that could buy NASCAR. And I was thinking about back to when Fox first got into the coverage of NASCAR. And they came in and kind of revolutionized the way NASCAR was presented on television with the different graphics they had, with the music packages they had, how they announced the starting lineup with kind of the not cartoonish-looking cars, but a graphic design car as opposed to the real cars. And they presented it in a totally different way for a totally different audience. And there has not been much innovative about the way NASCAR is presented on television in a really long time.
Yeah, it's like a lot of sports. They're made for TV shows now. It's more you're playing more to the television audience than you are for the people who buy the tickets to set up in the grandstands. What about those people? How are you going to keep those people entertained? Well, the fact of the matter is they make more money off the television properties than they do the people buying the tickets to go see the races. So the decisions made, including the playoffs format, all these other things that they brought into NASCAR, are all with input from the television executives. What makes for a good television show? And I think there needs to be a happy medium somewhere where you really also need to cater to the people to come out and enjoy the experience in person at the racetrack too. And I see that in all kinds of sports where television executives are in on the decision-making process because of the amount of money that's at stake. And so I don't know what the future lies in that, but racing is a great sport, even with all of the different things that they brought into the sport, like the playoffs and the stage racing and all of this kind of thing. And you take all of that away, racing is still a sport that has stood the test of time, and the drivers are the ones that drive the ratings and the attendance at the track. If you got great personalities as far as the drivers are concerned, that's what draws rating. Look at what Tiger Woods does to golf when he comes in.
Moves the needle.
Be that kind of a personality that comes back into NASCAR, like what Dale Earnhardt and Jeff Gordon did for the sport. I think there will be. It's generational. You have those kind of personalities that come along in every sport that drive ratings, and I think it'll happen again in NASCAR. But right now, I just don't think that you have a collection of drivers that have that kind of impact like Dale Earnhardt and Jeff Gordon did a few years ago.
All right, talking with Kirk Elliott from the Racing Boys. I'll wrap up with this, Kirk, kind of bring it back to Kansas Speedway, despite the struggles that NASCAR has had over the last few years. We know NASCAR doesn't release attendance figures. They just don't, and that's fine. But I like the innovation of the night race at Kansas Speedway. I think it's fantastic to watch in person. I've been a couple of times when the race starts and the sun's still up and it's starting to set and then you go full night. I think it's just a terrific event to watch in person, and it looks great on television as well. How is Kansas Speedway doing? I mean, that was the last big innovation they've had. They've done some resurfacing and things, but how is Kansas Speedway doing overall?
I think they stack up very well among all of the tracks across NASCAR. Pat Warren just does an outstanding job of running this racetrack, and he knows that it's the fans that you got to keep happy. And when you do things, you know, the free parking, and you're allowed to bring coolers in and do all of these things and keep your fans happy, you know, it's reflected in the crowds out here. I thought it was a terrific crowd last night at Kansas Speedway, and I think all credit goes to Pat Warren and his staff for the way they operate this racetrack. They do a great job, I think.
I do like the fact they let you bring anything in as long as it fits into the right size cooler, because when I go to other sporting events, I feel like I'm going through customs at the airport sometimes.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, it's an unpleasant experience, and Kansas Speedway makes it as easy as it can be for the fans. And I really, and Pat and the people, all the people out there do such a great job.
Yeah, and I've been to a lot of different racetracks across the country, and you cannot find a more convenient facility to drive in and out. The way it's situated there in the corner of two interstates, easiest access of any racetrack that I can think of, and the drivers appreciate that. Kevin Harvick mentioned the other day how much he enjoys coming to Kansas Speedway with all of the, you know, the legends nearby and everything to do and how easy it is to get in from the airport. So the drivers really appreciate it, and I know fans that travel in and go to other racetracks really appreciate how convenient Kansas Speedway is to get in and out of.
Hey, Kirk Elliott, thank you very much for taking a little time on this Sunday to join us. I know it's been a long weekend for you and Scott Traylor out of Kansas Speedway with all the great coverage you've had on the Racing Boys shows as well as Sports Radio 810 WHB throughout the week. So take a break today. Enjoy this beautiful Mother's Day Sunday. And I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much.
Hey, it's been a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day to everybody. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that is Kirk Elliott from the Racing Boys. Talking about Kansas Speedway. Kevin Harvick, your winner this weekend. Pretty clean race until the final 30 laps. A couple of wrecks. Took out Clint Bowyer, Jamie McMurray, our local guys. But great presentation nonetheless. I got to see about the last 80 laps or so as we had a soccer game last night. But it just looks fantastic. It's presented well, and it looks fantastic on television. So congratulations to Pat Warren, folks at Kansas Speedway. Another great race weekend in Kansas City, Kansas. All right, we will take a quick timeout still to come on the show. Josh Briscoe is going to jump in studio, and we'll get a little preview, sneak peek at what he's got coming up on baseball tonight. And then the conversation could go anywhere. It could go to video games. It could go to music. It could go to his car breaking down. I'm not sure. We'll have to see. So we'll take a quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Sunday on this Mother's Day Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is running the show in our Rally House studios, and you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I love this song. This song puts you in a good mood. If you cannot be in a good mood listening to this song, I don't know if I want to know you.
This is my dad's favorite band. He's seen them.
Los Lonely Boys?
Yeah, like four or five, six times probably.
I don't hear them anymore. They still tour?
They still do. It's like smaller, obviously, like much smaller venues. Like a lot of times they're at like casinos and stuff. They're not doing anything big, but every now and then they come through either KC or Oklahoma at some kind of like smaller like casino that has like a small little, you know, stage to play.
Right.
And my dad, whenever they're in the area, they go and because they love them.
When that song came out, How Far Is Heaven, it was unlike anything that was on the radio at the time. There was so much garbage on the radio at the time. And that song came out and it was like, here's something different. And not only is it very different, it's very good. Good song. Put you in a good mood on Mother's Day.
I remember the first time I heard the song. This is back when MTV actually played music videos. Because I saw the music video for it. Yeah, no.
Get out.
It's crazy to think that the channel called Music Television actually used to have music television.
Right.
I miss those days. Like back when you would just watch like VH1. Like that's what I did in the summer. It's like you watch the VH1 countdown. You watch like all of MTV's random music video shows. And you would just watch music videos. And like I loved MTV back then.
Is it VH1 or MTV used to have you'd wake up in the morning and they would have like the top 10 videos?
Yeah, I think
like every day.
Yeah, VH1 was big. I think they were the morning one.
Okay.
It was like every morning, like the top 10 countdown.
Right.
And because I think MTV, if I remember right, they had like a, like basically from 6 to 9 was like their early morning. They just played music videos, but it wasn't like a show. It was just music video after music video, go to a commercial, a couple music videos. But like VH1 had the countdown in New York where they were like, here's number 10, 9, you know, so far and so on and so forth.
And now neither one of them play videos.
Nope.
It's all reality television.
Yeah.
It's all noise. It's all
reality television noise. And then like high school TV dramas.
Ugh.
Like they still, like, again, like the high school kids still love MTV. It's
right.
just for a completely different
right.
reason than when we loved MTV.
Well, I wonder, and here I'm going to go off on a tangent, which is fitting since Josh Briscoe's coming up here in a little bit. Why would you spend, if you're an artist, I guess, You spend the money to produce a video to put it on YouTube now, right? You don't expect it to ever be on.
Vivo is like the
Vivo, yes.
But Vivo, their biggest, I think, outlet is YouTube.
Right.
Like Vivo's who basically, now you can go to Vivo.com and there are those, but like YouTube's where you see basically.
Right.
I don't know many people that go to Vivo.com. It's
right.
You see it on YouTube.
Any YouTube video you pay, like music video, you see that logo in the corner, the red logo with the V on it. Yeah.
And yeah, I wanted the same thing
because
they
got
still,
95 million views. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Vivo still is like going strong, making music videos. But like, I wonder like where the. I mean, I guess it's advertising. Mean, I mean, that's obviously how they make
it's
money.
An
it's advertising.
Yeah.
I guess I just didn't realize. I'm a little surprised. Music. I'm happy music videos are so prevalent. I still like watching them, but I guess I'm surprised they're still, I guess, making enough money that a company like Vivo can actually at least make enough money to survive.
Right.
Still. So.
Right. We got a few minutes here, and obviously we're going off on a different loop here, but a few minutes before Josh Briscoe comes in. So I'll ask, Rudy, I'm pretty sure I know what you're doing for Mother's Day because we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but are you and your mom still planning on going to see Avengers today?
That is the plan as of right now. It may change, depending on like just timing. So like there's a showing at 1. I get off at like 12:10. Well, I'll probably leave her like 12:30. So like, we'll see, I guess. If not, we'll just like, we'll go out for lunch. You know, we'll just kind of hang out and spend the day.
Well, you got 20 minutes of previews before the actual movie
starts. Yeah, like that's the thing. I don't go to a ton of movies. And obviously, like, I just remember going to movies a while ago and like there'd be three or four previews. I went to one this year. There was like 7 or 8 of them now.
Yeah. I timed one time. It was 22 minutes. 22 minutes of previews.
Now, I really do like previews. So, like, I'm not, like, necessarily against it, but I was just, like, I remember, like, looking at my friend, like, do these previews seem like they're going,
they're,
like, really long?
And they're longer, too. Like, what's the, oh, gosh, the something water, the Oprah Winfrey movie, jeez, I'm going to totally blank on that one. But it would be, like a 4-minute preview for that movie and basically told you the entire plot. There was nothing they told you.
Are you thinking about Wrinkle in Time?
Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Josh had that one.
Well, they give you so much of the preview. Thank you, Josh Briscoe. They give you so much of the preview that you kind of can make your decision. This doesn't look very good. And Wrinkle in Time just didn't look like it was going to be very good to me. So I wasn't going to spend a ton of money going to watch that. So Rudy is going to watch Avengers with his mom. Maybe. because he admitted they're not the most motivated people in the world. So we're pushing Mother's Day back a week because we have some people from out of town in Columbia, Missouri, not that far, but can't get here. So we're pushing Mother's Day back a week. So everybody that's out to breakfast and brunch today and it's crowded and you got to wait to get in, I'm going to go next week and there's going to be nobody there, which would be great. Delayed Mother's Day is no problem. But one of the things I was talking about, telling somebody the other day, my brother and I and my dad, we lost our mom just about 25 years ago. And I was thinking about the influences that my mom had on our lives. And I got to thinking about just little things that she did to make us better people and actually had an influence in getting into broadcasting. So if you grow up in Catholic school, you go to Mass once a week during the week, and then you go again on Sunday. And one of the things they ask you to do when you're in grade school is do the readings. You get up there, you read the Bible reading for the day, and they ask for volunteers. I would never volunteer to do it. I went to St. Therese up in Parkville, Missouri, and I would never volunteer to do it. So my mom would say, why aren't you volunteering to get up there? And I said, well, I'm a little bit nervous, a little bit scared, stand up in front of all those people. You know, I can give my speech in class in front of 20 kids, but to get up in front of a church, the whole school and do it, I'm intimidated by that. And she said, well, look, some point, whatever you do in life, whatever career path you choose, you're going to have to speak in front of people. You're going to have to be confident when you speak in front of people. You're going to have to get up, whether it's in a boardroom or an office or maybe an auditorium full of people giving a presentation for the company. You're going to have to do this. So get up there and do it. And then after you do it in front of school a few times, you need to do it on Sunday in front of the whole church. And that's like, it was like 1,100 people. I mean, it was a lot. It was biggest. It was the only Catholic church in the Northland at the time. And so I did it. And I was nervous. And to this day, I'll do a reading once in a while, and still get nervous because it's very different than when I did television for 20 years, when I was doing radio. You don't see all the people watching you. But my mom made me do it. And it made me, when I think about the things that I've done in broadcasting, that was a big first step. She forced me to get comfortable talking and presenting myself in front of people and doing it and being confident about it. So that was a major influence. That was a big one. And the first person, my first job in media was at another radio station here in town before I got into TV. The first person I called when I got my job in radio, sports talk radio, the first person I called was my mom. Mom, I made it. I think at the time I was making $5 an hour. Mom, I'm not making a lot of money, but I got here. I got my foot in the door. I've got a way to start. And I started working for Don Fortune and Duke Fry over another radio station. And so many of us worked for Don and the folks over there at one point or another. We were all influenced by Don. But I got my foot in the door, and I credit my mom for doing that and being a big influence on that and getting it done. Also remember treating people with respect. And I've heard that theme a lot today. Social media kind of degrades our interactions and makes it easy to take shots at people for stupid things and no reason. I was at my house. I must have been early high school, I think, or maybe I was in eighth grade. Might have been freshman year high school. And my mom and I got into an argument about something. Don't remember what it was. So I went downstairs and I was like, I'm going to work out, take out my frustration. She yelled something from upstairs. And I said something I shouldn't have. I didn't curse. I never did that. Didn't curse. But I said something that you just don't say to your mom. I said something like, well, that stinks or that sucks or something like that. You're just not supposed to. She came downstairs, confronted me. We got into it again, and she popped me pretty good. You don't do that today. Parents don't do that. You can't do that today. She popped me, and I deserved it. I absolutely deserved it. But the point was, not only do you not talk to your mom like that, you don't talk to anybody like that. It's still going to happen, but you have to remember that you just don't talk like that. So my mom was a big influence on myself, my brother, and my dad. And Stephen St. John was talking about his mom this week on the Border Patrol in the morning. He said every Mother's Day, gets a little bit sad because, you know, his mom is not here. Jay Gutierrez has lost his mom, and I'm in the same group. But Stephen made a point of saying, you know, celebrate too. Celebrate the good things that your mom was able to do and the moments you were able to share with your mom. Celebrate that. You can be a little bit sad, but also be sure to celebrate. And those were good words by Stephen St. John, and I appreciate him saying those. And I am going to take time today to think about those good things and the positive things that we were able to share with our mom while she was here. So hopefully you get to do that too. If you still have your mom, give her a hug. Whatever you're doing today, just take some time to say thank you. I'm sure you are anyway, but just a reminder and celebrate the ones, the moms we don't have with us anymore. All right, on that note, I'm going to take a quick timeout, and I think we might come back and talk about sports. I'm not sure. I don't know where the final 20 minutes of the show is going to go because Josh Briscoe is going to come in here as he gets ready to do baseball tonight. So a quick timeout here. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is running the show here in the Rally House Studios, and you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Final segment of this Sports Sunday on a beautiful Mother's Day in Kansas City. Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Brad Porter, Rudy Salazar running the board in our Rally House studios, and jumping in to join us now is Josh Briscoe. That's a lot of J's. Jumping in to join us now is Josh Briscoe.
I like that. I love some good alliteration.
I always like a lot of alliteration. That's the old joke I used to have
very
in television.
Good. I always adore a lot of alliteration. Oh, did I just make your joke
yes!
better? Sorry,
yes!
You can have that. That's free.
That's why, like, if you're the host of a show, like a late night TV show, there's a reason your jokes are funny, because you have 25 people in a writer's room.
Yes.
Making
okay.
them better.
All right, good. I'm glad that this segment's going to be about why I don't like Jimmy Fallon.
That's all right. Jimmy why don't Fallon? You like Jimmy Fallon?
He drives
Fallon.
Me crazy, man. You literally
love hate. People love or hate
the
Jimmy
games
Fallon.
And stuff are fun, but you can say literally anything ever, and he will double over in like squinted face laughter in a way that is just completely. It's a complete caricature, and he will laugh at anything that any famous person says, and it drives me crazy.
Well, that's why every skit he ever did on Saturday Night Live, he would. But there's a term for it. You bust out laughing in the
break
middle.
Character.
Break
character.
Yeah. Yeah. Break character.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a certain term that everybody knows.
Yes. Right.
I should know.
Yes. No. Every skit. Every game, there's always a moment when Fallon just starts laughing, and that's like it feels like he's throwing that in the face of his job. Sometimes you got to be the straight man. Never, never, never a part of Jimmy Fallon's line of work.
I wrestle with whether or not he almost ruined more cowbell or made it better because he had the
don't blow it for us. Yeah, see, in the dosages, if he's not the focus of it, then it's a fine gimmick. On his actual show is when it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
The breaking in a skit or whatever is fine.
Okay.
I wish he would keep it together, and I think he probably could. Like, I don't think he's actually overwhelmed with hysterical laughter.
Especially
constantly.
After rehearsing it, what, 15 times?
I would think so.
Yes.
I would think so, but what do I know?
What would be great now is if somebody on SNL had that sort of character trait to break up in the middle of the skit, because then that would mean that what they're doing now is actually funny.
Ouch, that's painful. You didn't like the Donald Glover SNL?
I'm still catching up on that
okay.
one.
Okay, I saw most of that at
through.
This point.
I heard it was good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's so hit and miss right now with SNL.
Yeah, I will watch a lot of the musical performances, which even those like are never as good as the actual
right.
studio version, or even a lot of other live performances. And I'll go watch individual sketches and stuff on YouTube later.
Yeah.
But I don't even know how to get NBC. It's NBC, right?
Yes,
I don't
is.
Know how to get to it. I don't know how to get to NBC.
For 40 years, it's been on NBC.
Okay, that's right. I mean, this is exactly my ignorance. I don't
it
know
moved,
how to find
it's really
NBC.
Moved around a lot.
All right. All right, guys. Listen. Okay, hey, this is the segment where we understand that Josh is 14.
I think it's up to 45 seasons.
All right. All right, fine. I don't have cable or a satellite or an antenna. I actually did buy an antenna, and I could not figure out how to get it to work, so it's behind my TV.
You need Charlie for that. Charlie tells me this all the time, too. This is what I need to buy, an HD antenna.
But
Charlie's like the king of the antenna. He knows how to do it.
I'm not going to invite Charlie to my house. Are you kidding me? Then he'll know where I live. I see. I looked up the instructions and I looked at the reviews on Amazon and everything, and I have one of those HD antennas, and I thought I got it all set up, and just nothing happened.
Yeah.
But maybe Charlie is the magic elixir that I need.
The only thing, and I think Saturday Night Live and Lorne Michaels bank on this, the only thing that guarantees eyeballs right now is either bringing back Justin Timberlake again or Jonathan Goodman. Because Alec Baldwin is, I'm sorry, I'm worn out.
Yeah, I get that.
I get the jokes he likes to make now. He likes to play President Trump. I get that. I'm so worn out by Alec Baldwin. Saturday Night Live is supposed to be about changing appearances or bringing on different people, not the same thing.
Ben Stiller as Michael Cohen is really good.
Yes.
Because they look alike.
It's freakish.
It's crazy. So that was a nice addition.
When De Niro was on with Ben Stiller doing the skit a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, who was he playing?
He was
somebody in the Trump administration,
but De Niro was grilling him about.
But yes,
and that was funny.
Yes,
because it's De Niro.
Bringing in the big celebrities to play political characters is always funny. But at this point, I think America at large has general Trump fatigue, which I get. It's like, is this funny anymore? Or this is never funny because I love him. No matter where you are, I think you either are just very team Trump and you're like, this is never funny, or your team not Trump and you're like, this isn't funny anymore because I hate this.
Right.
They have a hard job currently also because SNL now exists in a universe where there is so much content everywhere. If I want, I can go find sketch comedy about literally anything. Anytime with the magic of the internet. So it's a hard time to be a weekly sketch comedy show. There's a reason that they die out.
And I follow a lot of comedians on Twitter, and they have self-produced sketch comedy.
Yep.
They have stuff on different outlets that aren't necessarily available on cable and satellite, and they'll put it up either on a Twitter or a link to a website. And, you can find the stuff. If you want to get away from – it's like I don't really get into politics on my shows, but I would say that I'm pretty independent. I'll just – music. I'll listen to rap, I'll listen to country, I'll listen to pop, I'll listen to old school, I'll listen to whatever it is.
Sure.
I'm not really offended by much, so I'm kind of independent, but I've reached a point where I've had enough. I know what the cold open to Saturday Night Live every week is the same thing.
Yeah.
With a different topic. It's the same thing, though.
Right. And I can't fault SNL for doing that, because that's usually what the biggest thing is. There's another. It's what are we going to do? Are we going to do this this week's insane politics story, or are we going to do something much less discussed? Our job is to get the big hook, I guess. So we'll do the big thing. But then, as a viewer, we're like, they had actual Stormy Daniels in the last cold open, and it's like that's a pretty big move, I guess. But she wasn't a great actress, stunning, we know what the story is. So it's a difficult place to be.
Right,
I don't envy their position.
Well, I wonder with the fatigue based on the topic matter or the shows kind of all looking the same. I'll bring this back to sports a little bit. I'm kind of wondering if that's led to, in my opinion, a rebounded interest. No pun intended. A rebounded interest in the NBA.
100%.
Because my kids love the NBA.
100%.
And I loved it when I was a kid. I grew up in the Magic Bird era, which morphed into Jordan, and Dr. J was at the tail end, and Barkley was there. And then we went through kind of a dead period but there's no real magnetic personalities, and now it's come back. And I really love it, and I'm wondering if that's contributed to the rebirth of the NBA. I'm not going to watch this show talking about the same subject over and over. I'm going to watch a compelling NBA game.
Yep.
And I would much rather watch the NBA than the national news right now.
I think there's a huge part of that, and I think even to make it even sportsier, what's happening in my brand, to make it even sportsier, I think that's a reason that the NBA is having success in the sports spectrum, because there's baseball fatigue, especially in Kansas City right now. Tune into Baseball Tonight here in about 15 minutes. In Kansas City, hosted by me. In Kansas City right now, what you have to dig and find the intriguing thing. The whole pregame show today is about Danny Duffy, because I think he's an interesting thing. But if you're in Kansas City talking about baseball and watching baseball, you have to pick the individual interesting thing. In the NBA, the big stories are interesting. I am extremely fatigued when it comes to the LeBron and Jordan conversation.
I'm done with that. There's no debate. One was the greatest player of his era. One's the greatest player of the current era.
Yeah, and
I'm fine with that.
I could go ahead and try to plant my flag on some side of splitting hairs and like you could, like Mike Greenberg had a statement that stuck with me for some reason for the, you know, the first time in Mike Greenberg's sports talking area, something that stuck with me for more than 30 seconds. Like, well, you can't say that LeBron's better than Jordan. You can't say that Jordan's better than LeBron. I'm like, if we could just land on that for a minute, I'd be fine
yes,
with it.
I'm good with that.
Like, you probably could go ahead and split those hairs, but if we don't, it's totally okay. but that, so, and that's where I find myself a lot in sports. I also kind of find myself being, not like an exile because of, but I find myself kind of having to look for my compatriots on this where I don't mind like admitting that I'm fatigued in some sports stories where like I'm fatigued by baseball in game 90 whenever the season doesn't matter. I'm fatigued with the LeBron and Jordan conversation. And I got – and I love the NFL and I love the Chiefs. I had NFL draft fatigue like a month before the draft actually came.
Before the draft even gets here, yeah.
Yes. Like the actual day before and then the day of the draft and the week after, we're all great. But like how long can we talk about Josh Allen for these like 3 weeks? But that's also like that's the industry. Like you have to – we have to fill this airtime. Which is why for me, like I like on Friday, I was sick. I've had allergies for the last week, and then I ended up with like a chest cold. I was just like a
zombie. Miserable,
a yeah. miserable, miserable zombie. And then so on my show on Friday, we just spent the first hour asking people to give us their relationship questions, and then we would give relationship advice. Because man, I can't. What do you want me to say about Garrett Nnadi for the 15th hour this right. week? I've given it to you, and if you want it, it's on the podcast. We've talked to 3 different people in 14 different directions about every single draft pick this week. I feel good about, you know, all the discussion we had there. I'm done. Let's talk about how you've got to give your girlfriend your 5th favorite hoodie and never one of the top 4. Yeah. Like this is stuff
that
to
is
live
a good
by.
Rule. I wish I had known that when I was younger.
That's what I'm trying to give that wisdom to the masses.
Yeah.
Also, like you can play it up. Wear your 5th favorite hoodie more often around her. She sees you in
yes.
the hoodie. Like, oh, that's his favorite hoodie. No, that is hoodie number 5. and so eventually you give that hoodie over. You spray it with some of the cologne or whatever. Like you can go ahead and layer this up however much you want. You give that 5th favorite hoodie away. And it seems like this grand gesture, and you could argue that it is because you've put the thought and the time
right.
into it.
It's
but
mine.
In reality,
right.
you've got this planned out. Hoodies 1 through 4, your rotation, as I think Kent Swanson tweeted, you got to keep your bullpen intact. Your yeah. bullpen is intact.
HDH, baby.
Yes. But like, all right, well, this year of Luke Hochaver can go. We're going to give her Luke Hochaver because she needs to feel like she's gotten something of value from me. In reality, it's hoodie number 5. So, that was going to a Goodwill a couple years later on anyway, but she doesn't know that.
No. So you're playing a 3D chess thing.
100%. You've got to have a strategy.
Getting out in front of this.
You can only have so many hoodie casualties before you eventually learn your lesson, and that's where I got.
Because once it goes, you're not getting it back.
I had this conversation with a friend a while ago. Getting it back is possible, but it will be
extremely
awkward, maybe painful, maybe literally painful interaction. But at the very least, painfully awkward.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Don't play yourself. Yeah. Except for the 5th hoodie.
I'll throw this out at you. Another thing that appeals about the NBA to me is, first of all, you see the players up close.
Yep.
You know exactly what they look like. Their shoes are way cool.
Mm-hmm.
They're walking into the stadiums. They got the
catwalk on the way in.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Love
it's
that.
Good.
I love it.
Well, Major League Baseball, I talked about this earlier, Clevinger with Cleveland. He's been wearing these tie-dye cleats with like a sunflower on the side. He got a letter from Major League Baseball this week. You will stop wearing these or we will fine you.
Zobrist got those for black cleats.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and sorry, then, go ahead.
So he put a picture on Twitter and other players were like, baseball wants to skew younger and improve the demographics. Let's ban these cool shoes. And then he wore the pink ones yesterday to celebrate Mother's Day. And I'm like, okay, soccer, you wear whatever you want.
Right. Well,
loud, wild, the crazier, the better.
Yep.
NBA, same thing.
Yep.
Wild, loud, crazier. NFL lets you do it for 1 week a year,
right.
and it's for charity, but the NFL keeps 75% of the money.
Which, the NFL has this figured out, man. It's
for
the military and for charity and for breast cancer.
They keep the
money.
Mm-hmm. And baseball is just so far behind.
Like, it's so repressed.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, they'll let you get away with putting the initials on your hat if somebody passes away. Mm-hmm. They used to try to come down. But like when, I hate to bring up this topic, but 9/11, the Yankees wanted to wear FDNY and NYPD hats.
Mm-hmm.
No, you can wear them for pregame.
Yep.
Same thing in Kansas City when we had the firefighters tragedy a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Eric Hosmer, they got the special hats, which are fantastic, and he said, we want to wear these for the game. Nope, you can wear them in pregame, but not for the game.
And it's all the thing
it's
that
marketing.
Is insane
and
is it? Yes, it's about merchandising.
Well, I was going to buy a Royals hat tonight, the original, but
right.
They're wearing some other hat. Now I'm not going to buy anything.
Right? It's money out of the league's pocket in their own mind. And I understand also wanting to preserve your brand and everything, but eventually you have to change. You
There's
have to change your brand.
162 games.
Yeah, and your brand should be evolving into something that can be somewhat customized. I'm actually like a uniform nerd. Like I like uniforms and also the uniformity of them. Like I like that in the NFL players all have to wear like the socks that go up to their knees or whatever. Like somewhere in there you can find me liking the uniform aspects of uniforms. And also basketball has the advantage of their shoes you can actually wear.
Right.
Like if I walk in here in baseball
cleats
someday,
yeah.
Someone's gonna ask me what is wrong with me. As if they don't already. But like you can actually wear the basketball shoes. But the brand has to evolve, and that's the thing with the NBA, where in the NBA, the personality is a part of the brand.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I like that. I don't mind that the NBA is a little bit high school. In fact, I love that the NBA is a little bit high school, because what are we supposed to do? And again, game 95 of the baseball season, when everybody's talking about unwritten rules, and everybody's wearing the same cleats for the 95th consecutive game, it's so repetitive, and the spirit of the sport is so repressed.
Mm-hmm.
Where in soccer and basketball, and the NFL is kind of moving that direction, but it's closer to baseball than to basketball. There's at least a little bit of that free spirited nature that allows people to engage mm-hmm. with the players and the style and everything. And I think baseball would really benefit from finding the ways that they can do that while still being baseball.
I saw another video posted on Twitter. Darren Erstad is the baseball coach at Nebraska.
Okay.
And he's on the hot seat because they have not been doing well since he took
Did
over
he
as head coach.
Did he play at Wichita State?
No, he played at Nebraska.
Okay. There's yeah. something. Okay, I got to figure out why I know Darren Erstad.
Nebraska plays Wichita State pretty much every year, so like he's always in Wichita.
I went to a lot of Wichita State games as a kid, but I'm trying to figure out why Darren Erstad landed with me. Go ahead. I'll just Google this while you tell the story.
Nebraska player hits a home run, and Erstad takes player out of the game after epic bat flip. And I was like, well, this I got to see.
This has to hit somebody in the stands, right?
This I got to see. So a kid hits a home run, stands there and admires it.
Mm-hmm.
Catcher comes walking up behind him like, and he's screaming at him, get moving.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes the bat and just a little upward tick on
yeah,
the toss.
Oh,
nothing.
Flick the wrist.
Nothing major. I'm like, guys, please. It's like college football. K-State played in that Pinstripe Bowl years ago and there was a big bunch of military in the corner and a K-State mm-hmm. player scored a touchdown. He went over and saluted.
Yep.
Nope.
Flag.
Yep. Flag. You're
Flag.
Out. You're out.
No praying, no saluting,
nope.
no nothing.
No personality. Zero. But if you play college baseball or college softball and you hit a home run, the dugout's empty like it's game 7
right.
of the World Series. Volleyball, they're doing backflips
after
every
point.
How
dare they have these emotions? Give me more. I want more Baker Mayfield and more Bryce Harper, damn it.
All right.
I like that.
I am out of here. Josh Briscoe is going to continue with the fun
yes,
on baseball
talking
tonight.
Talking about repressed baseball for an
yes,
hour.
Yes, exactly. So I want to thank Rudy Salazar. I want to thank Jed Marshall for getting the guest. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms. Thank you to Josh Briscoe, Howard Richman, Kirk Elliott. My name is Brad Porter. You've been listening to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810, WHB.